of Perek Hey, chapter 5, and had one more note that I had wanted to make on chapter 5 before we proceed into chapter 6. And, you know, again, obviously implicit in my statement that after Pesach we're going to be in person is that our next class is after Pesach. We do not have class next Tuesday. So really, I don't want to get one of those notifications of so-and-so has joined your Zoom meeting. We're not having class next Tuesday. Chapter 5, sentence 27 was the last point that I... Oh, before that, actually. I apologize. There's a link at the top of your source sheet for a Wikipedia page on the Siege of Tyre. Last week, I mentioned to you that Shlomo provides food for Hiram, and someone, I think it was Rav Bazak, said that actually makes a lot of sense because Tyre at the time was on an island and that Alexander the Great was the one who filled it in. So there's more to be said about that and how much of it would have been Alexander, but the key point is that indeed Alexander lays siege to Tyre, as you see, in the year 332 before the Common Era, and as part of that, he ends up building a causeway from the mainland to Tyre, but it was, in fact, an island originally. So that's what he was referring to. And thank you to Janine, who also did internet research on this. But after that, in sentence 27, we are told, after this deal that Shlomo makes with Hiram, Vayal HaMelech Shlomo Mas Mikol Yisrael. Shlomo charges all Israel a mas. Mas we often translate as taxes. We're going to talk about whether this was financial or something else in a moment. Vayi amas shloshim elef ish. The mas produces 30,000 men, and he sent them to Lebanon, and we've got three ships of 10,000 men. And the question of who is doing the work is important, and I think what happened was last week I wasn't plugged in, and we had to like cram it in very quickly at the end, and so I said I wanted to come back to it to explain it better. So that's what I'm trying to do this week. The problem that we have is that in our text here in Malachim, it's saying that Shlomo imposes a tax and presses the Jews into labor, which Radak supports in source number 2. He says, yeah, that's one of the powers of a king. Kimishpat HaMelucha, like the laws of the king, Kamoshin Amar, like it said in Shmuel Aleph and Perichet, when Shmuel told the Jews what kings can do, Vatem Tiyulo Lavadim, you will be slaves to him, you will be slaves to your king. And even though in the commentaries on the text there, most commentators believe that's not the legitimate right of a king. Rather, it's a warning, kings will do this. In the Gemara, we find the view that seems to be accepted as halacha, that this is the king's right, so Shlomo was able to force the Jews into labor to build the Beis HaMikdash. The second version of what happens is found in Divrei HaYamim Aleph, chapter 22, and Divrei HaYamim Bet, chapter 2, and there it says that David gathered Geirim to do the work for the Beit HaMikdash. Geirim does not mean people who converted to Judaism here. Geirim means foreigners. It means outsiders. David gathers them to do the work, and that Shlomo then actually used them for it. And I noted for you last time in source number 3, the view of Abarbanel as well as Ralbag, that the Geirim we are talking about here are the Givonim. Givonim were the tribe, was the tribe that made a deal, a peace treaty of sorts with Yehoshua, deceiving him into thinking that that treaty would be okay. They became woodchoppers and water drawers for the Mishkan, and those are the ones who do the work for the Beit HaMikdash, and they actually, as Abarbanel puts it, do this willingly. They see it as an extension of the deal that they had made originally. That's a second piece of it. But then there's a third piece, which we will see in Malachim itself. If you go to chapter 9, sentence 20, I gave you the reference on the sheet. It's the third bullet point in source number 1, so you could see it there. We are told, Kol ha'am hanosar min ha'emori ha'chiti ha'prizi ha'chivi v'ayilusi ha'shalomi b'nei Yisrael hema. All those who remained from those Canaanite tribes who were not Jewish, b'neihem asher nosru achareihem ba'aretz, their sons who remained after them in the land, asher lo yachlu b'nei Yisrael ha'achrimam, who the Jews were not able to eliminate, v'ayalim shlomo l'mas oved ad ayom hazeh. So Shlomo had them being the ones to do labor. So who was doing labor when and on what projects is very, very unclear. So there are two basic approaches. One approach is the approach that Rashi takes here, which is that the Jews, when they provided a mas, it meant a financial payment, and others did the work. They hired people. It was a tax, it was a financial tax on the Jews. Radak did not like that idea, because Radak said that doesn't make sense. It's a monthly shift. You're providing actual manpower. So Radak said there was easier work and there was harder work. The easier work was by the Jews. The harder work was done by these Gerim, who we mentioned, the Givonim. And as far as this other business of the remaining Canaanim, that's not the Beis HaMikdash. That's other construction work. That's not the construction of the temple. I noted at the end last time, there's also a separate issue of competing numbers of laborers in the different texts. I'm not going into that right now. But what I wanted to get to in all of this is that I see two danger signs in this, in what Shlomo does. The first danger sign is you're taxing the people. And taxing the people is never going to win you friends. Right? That's never going to be a good idea. And we know what happens after the time of Shlomo. His son Rehavam is overthrown. The 10 tribes split off. And even though there were multiple issues involved there, the major one that they raise is the tax burden. Take a look, please, at source number 4. Rabbi Amnon Bazak makes this point. He says, Domeh, it appears, Sha'af b'parshasenu yesh makom ladun es ma'asav shel Shlomo al shem Sofam. He says, even in our portion, there is room to judge Solomon's deeds for their results, meaning to say, he is heading in a bad direction. Much as we saw in other sections about Shlomo, right? We talked about it with the horses. We talked about his marriage to the daughter of Paro. So here too, there's a problem brewing. Al sipasha chalukat hamamlacha bikshu ha'am merechavam. At the cusp of the division of the monarchy, when they were about to split off those northern tribes, they asked Rehavam, Shlomo's heir, Avicha hikshas ulenu, your father made our yoke tough. Ve'ata, ata hakel me'avodas avicha hakasha, make it easier for us. Reduce the burden. Umeulah hakaved, and his terrible yoke, asher nasan aleinu, which he put onto us. They complained to Rehavam. Mistaber shereishisa shel tchusha kashazu haisa kan davka. So he says, Shlomo putting this tax burden, whether it's financial or physical, frankly, at this stage, that's what sets things up to go bad later. When he's doing something which should have been the height of his reign, instead it becomes the basis for the downfall of his reign. So that's one point. We have no evidence in the text right now that the Jews are anything other than thrilled. Meaning we don't find any objection. So it's not as though it's so glot, so perfect to say that that the problem is already here. I'm not so sure. Nonetheless, it's certainly something to keep an eye on. That's number one. Number two, the second objection or the second concern, and then I'll take comments, is raised by Rabbi Yitzchak Levi. And that's what I brought you here in source number 5. He says, isn't it interesting to see the difference between the construction of the Mishkan, the tabernacle the Jews traveled with in the wilderness, and the construction of the Beit HaMikdash? The whole description of construction of the Mishkan is volunteers. People love it. They bring this material, they do that work. It's emphasized repeatedly in the text that everyone is nidiv lev asher nadvarucho, those who volunteer, they just want to give. So much so that they reach a point where the people have oversubscribed. They've brought more than is necessary, and Moshe has to call a moratorium. The opposite of what you're seeing here, where it's a tax. So take a look at source number 5 at Rabbi Levi. I'm going to read out my English translation in the interests of time. In the sanctuary, on the other hand, different from the Mishkan, the royal and empiric aspect stands out. He says, the nation of Israel is already established in its country, and the monarchy is established, and the construction of the sanctuary is performed as one of the royal mitzvot after establishing a king and destroying Amalek. Meaning, we've learned elsewhere, the Gemara says it, there are 3 mitzvot. When you enter the land, you're supposed to establish a king, you're supposed to destroy Amalek, and you're supposed to build the temple. So this is one of your 3 mitzvot. On the royal or empire aspect of the building of the sanctuary, testify also the ties formed with neighboring nations for this. Meaning, the ties that Shlomo makes with the nations that are around us in order to build it, as opposed to turning to the nation as a whole, that demonstrates that this is not really a national thing. This is something the king is arranging. He's forming alliances with other nations in order to get labor, in order to get materials, perhaps. The nation itself is not close to the matters of the sanctuary. In the time of Shiloh, the Mishkan in the end of Shoftim, or throughout Shoftim, and also when there was a major altar in Noven Givon, and the Ark was in Kiryat Yearim and Ir David, we don't find any special interest of the nation in these places, right? In other classes, we've talked about the fact that the Mishkan was largely abandoned by the general population. They brought their offerings on minor altars, and that was that. The king was the planner, organizer, and executor of the building of the sanctuary. The nation's role was primarily in the tax he collected from them. And he says, not only that, that's going to be true in the future. The king Mashiach, he's quoting you the Rambam in his Laws of Kings. He says, the king Mashiach, or maybe translated as the anointed king, will stand and restore the reign of David to its old first power, building the Beit HaMikdash. In other words, what Rabbi Levi is pointing out is not necessarily a problem. He's not seeing this as a challenge, but he says, you know, the Mishkan was labor of love. The Beit HaMikdash is something that is done by the king, and whereas the Mishkan was voluntary, this is a tax. So he thinks all of this makes a lot of sense. He says it makes sense. The Mishkan was the nation's job. The Beit HaMikdash is the king's job. But I think it can't be a good sign. It just can't be a good sign. If things were healthy, then people would be volunteering. They would hear Shlomo say, I'm building the Beis HaMikdash, and they would be lining up to bring things. And the fact that you don't see that, even though, again, Rabbi Levi is not making the point that this is a problem. He's just noting it as a feature of the way that it's being built and the way it's supposed to be built. I think this isn't a good sign. And I think we're going to have to revisit this as the story develops. Clear? Everyone follows? Okay. Questions and comments on that, on this piece about the tax?
You said there were 3 things. You said the building of the Mishkan to destroy Amalek, and what was the third?
Oh, to appoint a king.
Oh, but we had a king. Okay.
Right, so but these are the 3 okay. mitzvot when you enter the land. Yeah. Vanessa. We're getting to that. It's a good question. We're not there yet. That's why I structured, if you look at the title at the top, who built it, who designed it. First we're dealing with who built it, then we're going to come back to who designed it. It's a good question, but we're not there yet.
And what about the placement? Is that also going to be answered?
So the placement is actually discussed back in Shmuel. We did it not that long, maybe it is that long ago by now, in the Thursday afternoon class. We're told that at the end of chapter 19 in Shmuel, David runs away to Shmuel trying to escape Shaul, and there's some kind of conversation there, and the Gemara learns from the text that Shmuel at that point discusses with David the site where the Beit HaMikdash should be built.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Sure. Ricky.
Yeah,
You were going to say?
I have to say that from I first saw these verses about the building and the discussion with other nations, that's what bothered me right away, that it was not done with the Israelites, that it was, there was some kind of, it's almost impure, like these are impure nations of building the most sacred place that one can imagine. And that's really bothered me, and I think
it
reflected on that.
Right. We talked about the possibility that it's actually doomed because it's built by Tsor, by Tyre. You are correct. Okay.
I'm sorry. Could you elaborate on your answer?
No, I mean that, what you're saying is what we had said. But we had said this is from last week that as you say that. The fact that Tyre is involved in the construction process is actually, according to the Midrash, problematic. Now, here comes Moish, who's going to defend the alliances. But we noted, I think...
Of the impurity of the people working...
I don't like using the word impurity because I find that word is too vague. It's not something that I'm good with. But it's that it's our job. It's our mitzvah. This is for us to be doing, not to be outsourcing it. I will note, and I think I mentioned it last time, that there is the view, I mentioned it 2 weeks ago, I think, there's the view of Rabbi Yitzchak Levi that the alliances are part of Shlomo's vision. He thought that the alliance with Tyre is really important because Shlomo wants this to be the nations as a whole, a building by the nations to reach God. And in his mind, Tyre is the representative of the nations because they are the merchant to the world. You have representatives from all the nations who are sort of feeding into that. So there is that other approach to it. I have to say, though, the Midrash that we saw last week really wasn't a fan. Yes, Moish. You're muted. So they weren't, Maish. They weren't. They were in 1 month shifts.
Okay. Now you can leave me to that.
Okay.
For some reason, I had my hand that there were three.
No, months. 1 month shifts. Okay. So, that's in terms of finishing off chapter 5. I have on your sheet review questions for chapter 5. But I don't want to spend a lot of time on that because there's so much we need to see in chapter 6, and I think we have like 9 weeks. Or 8 weeks after Pesach of class, afterwards. So I'm gonna leave the review questions to you with respect, and anyone who doesn't remember the answer to any of them can always email me, and I'll give you the answer key. Okay, now I wanna go further at this point into chapter 6. What we're gonna see here in chapter 6